BBC T Sport Extra.
That's what happens when you don't get your jingles and your stabs sorted, basically.
Well, to be fair, who doesn't want to hear it twice?
Yeah.
I'll hear it twice.
Start as we mean to go on. Yes, BBC T Sport Extra here with you until 10 o'clock this evening. And this is something we've been looking forward to very much, hasn't it, Matty Nixon?
Certainly is. Joined in the studio by the European Tour golfer, Graham Storm. How are you doing, Graham?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show.
And it's been a bit of a frustrating time of late, but I'm sure we'll get to that in just a moment. A year to the date almost since your last tournament win?
Yeah, it's gone quite quickly, but I can remember most of the shots, I think.
I bet you can remember every single one that you made. I'm sure I would have done.
I can certainly remember the putt a hole to win. I'm getting on a bit.
Well, we'll be getting to that in just a moment, as well as talking about that injury and going through all the things locally in the golfing world, because it's a pretty packed scene at the moment in the northeast.
In terms it is, yes, of course. Graham Storm with us until 9 o'clock this evening on BBC T Sport Extra, and he's playing DJ as well with first up George Ezra.
BBC T Sport Extra.
Helps if you hook your mic up, doesn't it?
just ready to
talk about George Ezra there on BBC T Sport Extra. Blame it on me. Joined in the studio by Graham Storm. First choice of yours, Graham. What's George Ezra? Why him?
We were down in Cornwall on holiday and didn't really know the guy's voice or his name or anything, but yeah, loved the song, and my kids especially loved it, so we played it in the car all the time, so we went and got his CD and everything.
Ah, nice one.
He was on in Newcastle not so long ago. Did you not fancy going to see him?
I didn't know. Somebody should have told me.
Sorry, how bad.
Kids have to keep you up to date with that. Graham Storm with us in the studio until 9 o'clock. If you've got a question for Graham, you can text 81333, start your message with the word tease. You can tweet us at BBC T-Sport, or you can email tease.sport@bbc.co.uk. I guess there's only really one place to start, Graham. I mean, probably a bit of a frustrating year for yourself. What with you being out with injury, how is your wrist right now?
Yeah, it's been very frustrating. My wrist isn't great. I've got a little bit of tendonitis that's flared up. I did start playing about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and everything felt great. But I just went on the practice range one day, and it didn't feel so good. And I thought, decided to stop, speak to the surgeon that did the operation. And he spoke to me straight away, told me not to worry, just take some anti-inflammatories, but it just hasn't quite calmed down, so I'm seeing him again next Monday.
It must be frustrating, one of those like niggly injuries that never seems to go away. And you mentioned at the time when you were going to have surgery, there was about six or so tournaments where you were playing with it and just having to cope with it all the time. How frustrating was that?
Yeah, I mean, it was really frustrating in the sense that I'd taken an injection in the December, hoping to be fully fit, ready to get going again, Abu Dhabi and everything, and obviously defending the South African Open Championship, and I wanted to be there, and it was just too soon, and the wrist wasn't right, and I then just kept on taking the medication just to try and get me through, but I knew it just couldn't happen, and in April I just decided to speak to the specialist and see what he could do for me, and I saw him the Monday the 23rd, and I was in for an operation on the 30th. So, yeah, that's how quick it was.
I mean, an injury like that, is it part and parcel of golf, or is it just... Because, I mean, it is quite straining on certain parts of your body because of your swing and everything else, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. They're seeing more and more wrist injuries as the game gets stronger and faster, if you like, because, you know, the guys are hitting the ball so far now and everybody's trying to hit it harder and harder. And I'm not one of the long hitters. In fact, I'm probably one of the shorter ones. But, you know, I do work hard in the gym to try and keep strong and stay as supple as I possibly can. But I'm not getting any younger at 40.
I mean, in terms of... You mentioned the long game there in terms of golf. Would you say that's how it's most evolved in recent years? It's becoming more of a... Because the drives are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, aren't they? And what always amazes me when I watch golf, having played a little bit of pitch and putt as a kid, and couldn't hit a cow's backside with a banjo.
That's how I started pitch and putt. It's great.
It is, isn't it? It really is. How far they can hit a ball, but how accurate the drives are as well.
Yeah, that comes down to the technology, and that's why the guys can, you know, give it a good smack and see how far it goes. And you know, when John Daly, when he came out, he was hitting the ball over 300 yards with a small head, even though it was a metal. And Then Tiger Woods took it to the next extreme. But there's more and more of the guys that are coming out fitter, stronger, leaner, bigger, and just they're just hitting it miles. And
yeah.
You see the arms on the likes of Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson, and you stand next to them, you think, oh, I can't believe this.
Dustin he is a unit as well, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And he's so wiry as well, so he's got like flexibility as well as strength and speed. So he's got the full package, yeah.
I mean, does it hurt being sat here and talking about other people that are playing?
No, not at all. I mean, I have had the chance to do a little bit of commentating, and I've been doing that. I went to France, Germany. I did the Open, which was great. Mm. So I got
Don't
to see some of the best
be
players
the
in the world. Yeah, so it was great to go and see some of the best players in the world and watch it from a, you know, outside the ropes, and you know, looking at it on the TV screen, watching how the guys go about their business and swing the club. And I've really enjoyed it from that point of view, but it is very frustrating when you're at a tournament and you want to get involved.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, yeah, of course, the injury itself is frustrating, but to actually like take a breather and a bit of an overview of the sport itself, do you ever just, like you say, you've been to those tournaments, do you ever look at a few of those players and pick up a few pointers or anything like that? Is it just a bit of a time for you to take a step back from it a little bit? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Just watching the likes of Dustin Johnson, you know, Brooks Koepka, Justin Rose, who I've grown up with, and seen how his game has evolved over the years and how much better he's got and how much further he's actually hitting it by all the training regime that he's doing. So, you know, I've got myself in the gym. I'm working really hard, working with a trainer. He's from Harrogate, and he's done a great job on getting me stronger everywhere else. It's just, unfortunately, the wrist is just not quite holding on at the moment.
Are you? Do you have a time frame at all, or is it a little bit of a running situation?
Yeah, it is. I was estimating to play Abu Dhabi. Was going to be my first one, middle of January. That's looking highly unlikely right now, unless somebody can, you know, sprinkle a bit of magic on me. But we'll just wait and see. It's a bit of a waiting game. The one thing that I can do is rush back, because that could finish me.
Mm. And as someone who hasn't played golf to a high standard, let's be honest, bit of pitch and put it down a Prizic base, what would it be like getting back onto the course? Will it be difficult to kind of get back into the, pardon the pun, swing of things? in terms of getting your long and short game back and everything else?
Yeah, I think the thing that I've been able to do is I've been able to do a bit of putting. You know, when I did start back, I followed a programme. I worked on my short game. My short game was razor sharp, to be fair, which I was very surprised at, because that's the one thing that generally goes, just the feel shots. I think it'll be the longer game will take a little bit of time to fine tune. Like I say, I don't hit it a country mile or anything like that. You know, finding fairways is my game, and being able to attack the pins from there. It's just, we'll just see where it is when I go back. But I'd like to think that, you know, if I can get myself 80-85% fit, then I've got a good chance of getting back out there.
Mm. And I mean, you talk about there finding the fairways and everything else is your favourite game. Well, you'd have been the perfect person in the European Ryder Cup team this year, wouldn't you? Because that was one thing that everyone seemed to struggle with on the American side of things, and probably ultimately lost them the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've actually won on that golf course. So,
have you? Oh, of
you
course,
know,
yeah.
It's like I was watching French it Open from afar, and it was just great to see that Paris National, you know, stood up to a great test, and it was a fantastic Ryder Cup. The golf course was set up absolutely perfect for the Europeans. I think that the people who set the course up did a great job, and obviously Thomas will have had an input early on, but not right near the Ryder Cup. But he got what he wanted, and the golf course was tough, and the Americans decided just to try and blast their way through it.
Wasn't too tough for you, though, in 2007, though, was it?
It was. Well, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was a great feeling to win around a golf course that is so demanding.
Electric and Oasis on BBC.
What a tune.
Sport Extra. Because you're there at the end of the night at Empire on the dance floor, pushing everyone aside, busting that at the top of your lungs.
Can you blame him, man? What a tune. What a tune.
He'll slip you a fiver at the end of the night. BBC T Sport Extra here with you until 9 o'clock this evening. If you've got a message or a question for Graham, you can text 81333. Start your message with the word tease. You can tweet us at BBC T Sport or email tease.sport at BBC www.sctsport.co.uk. And we've had a question in. Can you ask Graham who is his personal pick on who he would have as the Pool's manager, other than Jurgen Klopp, of course?
That one's from Ted on the text.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think that Darrell Clark would be a good one if we could maybe try and get him from Bristol Rovers. Mm. I don't know whether how they're doing there this season, but you know, he's played for Hartlepool, didn't he? Mm-hmm. So, and he's done really well to get them into League One, I think.
Yeah, well, there's another Clark who's one of the bookies' favourites as well, Lee Clark, of course, former Newcastle midfielder. So certainly be interesting to see over time.
Would you how often do you look at Hartlepool United? Do you keep their progress over there?
Yeah, I look regularly. I know Craig Hignett quite well. I've been in here and done a couple of shows with him, and we keep in touch. And I bought a Liverpool shirt this year, donated £300+ to the football academy at the club. So, you know, any little helps, you know. I do follow the results, but obviously Liverpool's the team that
Love of Liverpool come from then? Is it the success of the 70s and 80s? Or?
Yeah, basically, I think it is because my dad was... Yeah, a massive fan, and as soon as I was old enough to wear a football strip, that was it. There you go, son. Crown Paints Liverpool. There you can wear
iconic
that.
Iconic shirt, isn't it?
Exactly.
You thought you were Graeme Souness running around with that Liverpool top one, didn't you? Must have been jumping around on Sunday then.
I was screaming at the top of my voice when the goal went in. I wasn't actually doing a Jurgen Klopp running around the house, but yeah, it was quite funny to see what he did there. Yeah.
Well, he got punished for it, didn't he? He got a charge of misconduct. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's probably right. It's within the rules, isn't it? You don't really want to see somebody run charging on the pitch and what have you, but when a goal goes in like that and everybody just thinks it's the ball's going over the bar, it was quite amazing.
So bizarre, though, wasn't it? Such a weird goal.
Mm. I've got the flip side of the coin. I've got family that are Everton season ticket holders.
Oh,
so
no.
They were as sick as a chip, as you can imagine. Honestly, that rivalry, when you're over in Liverpool, that is the rivalry, isn't it?
How often do you get to Liverpool games, would you say?
Do you know, the last time I was there, Brendan Rodgers was the manager. Yeah, so right. Because I've been so busy with my golf and everything, I've not had the chance to go. But when Rafa Benitez was in charge, I went quite a lot. I went to see them play against Real Madrid and we won 4-0. And, the game, two legs against Arsenal, I got to see those. So that was great. So I would like to go over while Jurgen's manager, just to see the passion on the touchline.
Yeah, I bet it would be fantastic to see. Footballing matters aside, it is the South African Open this weekend. It's a tournament you're not going to be there to defend. But let's reflect on that South African Open win. It was some day for you, wasn't it? Especially that playoff.
Yeah, it was quite incredible. I mean, fortunately, I was in the zone and kind of blocked out all the people that were there shouting the name Rory McIlroy and this, that, the other. So, yeah, it was a fantastic achievement, especially after the year previous in 2016 where I thought I lost my card and everything, to bounce back three tournaments later, back in the winner's circle. I mean, I never expected it. I played well in South Africa before Christmas, finished fourth at Leopard Creek. Mm. So I knew my game was in decent shape, but to go there and win, and obviously to play in the last round for 18 holes and then plus three against Rory, who was number two in the world at the time, was just a dream come true.
I remember sitting there on the sofa. I think I'd been working here that day, and I got in and put it straight on, and he was creeping up on you a bit, wasn't he? And he forced the playoff. Rory McIlroy, and I remember watching it and thinking, surely he can't do it. And I remember jumping around the house at the time. It was a fantastic achievement. What was it like to be, I know we spoke about it at the time, what was it like to be up against Rory in such a tight finish?
It was just a surreal moment of a day. It was just like I said, fortunately I was in that zone, so I could kind of block most of it out. But when I bogeyed 14, a three putt from the front of the green, it was my first bogey in like something like 49 or 50 holes for the tournament that week. It was like, well, what have I done here? I've made a mistake with a par 5 coming up, and how far he can hit it, he can, you know, just kill that hole. And I nearly actually made eagle on the next hole to bounce back. Mm. And then he went one ahead. And fortunately for me, he's such an aggressive player that the flag that he went for at 17, which was tight back right in the corner,
he just
couldn't go at that flag, and where he hit it was just the worst miss. And then he got up there and his ball was plugged. So you know, I was kind of just thinking, well, if I can just get through to a playoff now, that would be great, and managed to, but, and I just stuck to my game plan.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there Roy McIlroy bogeying on the 17th. I think we should hear from the man himself. This was his initial reaction straight after your tournament win.
Yeah, disappointing. You know, it's hard to, I probably, I made that bogey on 17 after the tough lie, and then, but saying that, Graham's played well all week. So, and it's a great story. I mean, going from thinking he's lost his card last year to, winning first week back out this year. So really pleased for him. I wish I could have done something more, but not a bad way to start the season, and, definitely something to build on in the weeks ahead.
I'd just like to point out, off the back of that answer, he was mourning about a back injury, which sounds like excuse making to me. But yeah, what does that do to you when you hear stuff like that?
Oh, it was just great to hear somebody like Rory McIlroy, saying nice things, and it's just an unbelievable achievement for me, and for him to acknowledge the fact of what could have happened only a couple of months before was amazing, so it just shows you that he knows what's going on around the world of golf, and he's not just in his own bubble. So to talk about me like that was nice to hear.
I mean, it sounds like he was saying you were deserving of that victory as well.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I was, really, in a sense. I did play fantastic golf all week, and when you then go on out on the last round playing with Rory McIlroy, and I'd never played with him before, but I'd known the kid for 10 years and seen him develop, I think what put it at ease pretty quickly was the fact that there was a big boxing match on early that morning on the Sunday. James DeGale was fighting against Badu Jack, I think it was. And we just broke the ice straight away talking about it. And he's a Manchester United fan, I'm a Liverpool fan, so we had a little bit of banter about that. So he was just easy to play with. But I think the other thing that people seem to forget, because it's always about, kind of Rory, him being the main challenger, there was another guy in that three ball, which was Jordan Smith. Mm-hmm. And at one point, it looked like he was just going to kind of run away from the pair of us. And he caught me up pretty quickly. So having him in the group, I think, helped me as well, because Rory had to not just think about me, he was thinking about what Jordan was doing. So, people do forget about Jordan.
I mean, I obviously don't want all the attention to be on him, but what's he like as a person, Rory McIlroy, because he's from Hollywood? Wrong one, not the American one, of course. But he gets all this attention. He's been a superstar in the golfing world for a number of years now, from a young age. But what's he like as a person to deal with? Is he big time, or is he just a normal lad?
Well, he is big time, without a doubt, but he is just a normal guy. He's very well grounded. He's had a great upbringing from his mum and dad. I've got the opportunity to have breakfast with his father and what have you, and he's a really nice guy, Jerry, and you can see he's had that grounding from the very beginning, and he's just a normal guy that's just reached stardom.
You mentioned Jordan Smith there as well. What about all of the young, young and other English talent that's coming through at the moment? I mean, the tournament wins. I mean, Tommy Fleetwood's just seems to be going from strength to strength. You've got Aaron Ryde won a tournament recently, and there's names left, right, and centre seem to be emerging as top players on the European Tour. That can only be good, can't it?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fantastic. I think the work that England Golf do, producing all these young players coming through, and I think the tour is just reaping the rewards of that. I think there's been over 12 different winners, English winners, this year. I think obviously Eddie Pepperell won a couple of times, and obviously from the northeast, Chris Paisley, he went on to win the South African Open the year after me. So he kept it in the northeast, which was fantastic. Good, so lad. I hope he does really well this week in trying to retain his trophy.
Yeah, and keeping it in the northeast as well.
Absolutely.
Which is like what we like to hear. You mentioned there that the win at the South African Open was great golf by yourself. You've also won the French Open, which was about 10 years prior to that. Which one of those is your crowning achievement out of those, would you say? Tough question.
It's probably one of the hardest questions, yeah. They're both equal in the sense that the first one was kind of get the monkey off my back. I felt like I was competing really well against some of the best players in the world at that time. You know, in 2005, 2006, I'd finished second a couple of times. So in 07, I felt like it was around the corner. I just didn't know which tournament it was going to be. And to be the French Open, one of the oldest tournaments in the world, and on that golf course, Paris National, then, you know, just a fantastic achievement. But then rolling on 10 years further down the line when you don't think you're ever going to win a tournament again, and especially, like I say, what happened before, you know, it's just a magical moment and one that I'll never forget.
You never lose it, Graham, though, do you? You never lose it.
I hope not.
I mean, starting off in Hartlepool as a base for golf, there's some excellent golf courses locally. Going back to where it all started, I mean, where did the love of golf come from? Because as much as I mentioned the pitch and putt that I used to play on as a kid and everything else, it isn't the most popular sport in the country. There's plenty follow golf and plenty play golf, but it isn't a football or a rugby or a cricket or whatever. I mean, where did that come from?
Yeah, I mean, I was always wanting to be a footballer. My dad was a good footballer in the area. My grandfather from my mother's side was a good footballer, but he was the one that introduced me to golf. And from the age of 11, you know, I just went to the Hartlepool Golf Club on the range there and just hit a 7-iron towards a tyre, because that's all there was to aim for at the time. And I just got the bug, really. And my grandfather then came to watch me play a football match. And I was playing in a league above, if you like. So I was like 13 at the time, but I was playing against the 15, 16-year-olds. And he just saw me get kicked from pillar to post, so it was like, well, football's not for you. So you should concentrate on the golf. So that's where it started. But like I said about the pitch and putt, when I used to go on holiday, I used to play with my mother and father and my sister and go on the pitch and putt down at near St. Augustine's down in Kent.
Yeah. Please tell me you were the best.
Sometimes.
I mean, you won some amateur competitions as well, quite a few. And am I right in saying that your mum actually carried you?
Yeah, she did. I couldn't drive earlier when I was an amateur, so I don't think I passed my test till I was about 19. Yeah. So she used to ferry me around to the events and, you know, kind of pull the trolley and do her bit, and which was great. And we always had a good time wherever we went and went away. And we used to go away as a full family, but obviously most of the time it was just my mother taking me because my father worked. Yeah. And obviously my sister had to go to school because sometimes the events were on at school time. Mm. But then, yeah, the British amateur, yeah, she was there caddying for me when I won. And then when we went to the Masters in 2000, it just felt appropriate and the right thing to do for both of us that she caddied for me in the US Masters. So she's the only mother ever to carry the US Masters, which
really?
Is a major achievement, isn't it?
That's
especially
fantastic.
On a golf course that maybe doesn't look hilly, but it is very, very hilly.
Yeah.
So she did really well.
Bless her. That's fantastic. We will move on, of course, to some of your work outside of golf and everything, but you were working in a factory at one point at some point. Am I right?
Thanks for bringing that up.
What's the I mean, you were juggling that whilst trying to get a career in golf. How difficult was that?
It was difficult because I turned pro in 2000 after that Masters, and I played okay on the Challenge Tour, and I got a few invites on the main tour, didn't quite get a card or anything, but then went to the tour school that year, got my card at the tour school at the first time of asking. But then 2001 wasn't a bad year, but 2002 was a really bad year where I just played awful, didn't know where I was coming from, you know, I didn't know what I was trying to achieve, I just lost everything. My game just went, and I needed to make some money. So I ended up working in Hibernia Foods, it was called at the time. And I worked in there for about 10 weeks, picking up, I think it was £148 a week or something, you know. And it was just a way to make some money to be able to fund the start of 2003 and start all over again, which was a really tough time because I had to go to EuroPro Tour qualifying, which was like the tour below the Challenge Tour. So it was basically was starting again. And the qualifier was at Wynyard, and shot 79 the first round, and I'm thinking, well, I've got no chance the next day. And my father died that night. Wow. And he'd been there to watch me play,
right?
And I was playing with who's a good friend of mine, Mark Warren.
Yeah.
And the next day I just said, look, I says, I lost my father last night and I'm only here just because I want to play for him, see if I can qualify. but you won't hear a peep out of me. And I shot 69 and qualified for the final. So, you know, that again, that was another achievement. But that was a real, real tough time.
And I suppose that probably gives you motivation to kind of keep going at this level on a yearly basis and realise your potential and not go back to any lifestyle outside of golf.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just makes me feel as though you should never give up. You know, because golf is quite a lonely sport. I know you're out there with your caddy and everything, but it is quite lonely at times, travelling the world, and you miss your family, especially now. And yeah, it's really difficult. It is. It's just, it's a hard life. People think of it as a glamorous lifestyle, you know, getting to go to all these great places. And we go to magnificent places, stay in magnificent hotels and everything. But it is, it's quite a tough job.
What a tune. BBC T-Sport Extra, Queen there with We Will Rock You.
I want to
the choice of Graham Storm.
Yeah, I want to go up and go for a run now. I'm feeling pumped. And then I've just remembered I'm lazy.
Yeah, I was going to say, rather you than me. I want to go and see the film. That film's, I haven't had a
Bohemian
chance to see
Rhapsody.
It yet.
Yeah, should be all right, actually.
It's got me in the mood now. I want to get to the cinema.
BBC T-Sport Extra, Graham Storm with us here until 9 o'clock this evening. We've had a tweet in from Alistair Ray, someone who you may know well. He says, great ambassador for North East Golf and love the work he's doing to inspire local children to try golf, playing with the world's best one day and tutoring in Hartlepool School the next day. So looking kind words there.
Very kind, yeah. He's a really nice guy, is Alistair.
Yeah, and he mentioned there, trying to inspire local children. You've got your own foundation, haven't you?
Yeah, so we've got a couple of junior events. We launched the Graham Storm Junior Open back in 2016, so that's been going 3 years now. And the amount of kids that we've got coming through the door at Hartlepool Golf Club has been amazing. I think we had 160-odd kids last year, and to fit them all in, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and they come from, you know, quite a long way. We've had kids from, I think, Buckinghamshire and as far as that, and cross over to the west side. And we used to have the 7 to 10-year-olds playing on that day, but this year we launched the Mini Storm Trophy. So we moved that to Wynyard, and we had 50 kids there. And again, they came from all over. One came as far as from Lincolnshire.
Wow.
So to have that dedication to come and play in my events was, you know, so good. And so we've decided to move the boundary further with the Mini Storm. So we're going to go with a series. We've got three events now. The first one will be at Rudding Park down in Harrogate. So we're going into North Yorkshire, going to Consett, so we're going into North Durham. And then the final one will be at Wynyard. So the kids will have to play in all three events to pick up the trophy at the end if they want to win the main prize. But there will be prizes at every event that we do.
It's sort of like a mini tour in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. And
it's like the Alfred Dunhill links.
Just need a few celebs. Yeah. But yeah, it's just great, and it's great to see the kids come through. And you know, we've had some really good kids come and play and support the event. It'd just be nice to see some local kids come more often.
Are they shell shocked when they come and see you at all, or when you speak to them?
I don't really know, to be honest. Sometimes I feel a little bit like that Disney character that has to get the pictures taken and do a few autographs. But I enjoy it, and it's great for them to come and ask me to give me an autograph and get a picture, you know. And if I make somebody happy, then I'm happy.
But I remember before the tournament last year and after the tournament, the standard of some of the kids involved, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been great. It's just, like I say, it's growing every year. And, you know, I'm sure that in 2019, once we've got the date sorted, I'm sure we'll get flooded with entries into the event.
We've had a text in as well. It's another text in. It says, as Graham Needy lost his card a year or two back, he must have seen a lot of guys who totally drift out the game. Who has been the biggest surprise to him on that front? In other words, didn't realise their full potential?
Oh, wow.
That's a tough one.
I know, yeah.
Yeah, it is. Guys do come on tour and then drift away. Difficult to name somebody, really, because it does happen frequently. You know, some guys that have done really well in the amateur game and then maybe not quite made the grade in the professional game, and vice versa. Some guys, you know, for example, if you look at like Ian Poulter, his background, he was just, you know, playing local stuff, and then he went and turned pro and did his PGA and did that. I think it's 3 or 4 years that you have to do that for, and then became a global star and, you know, Mr. Ryder Cup. So there's many different ways of getting to the top and different backgrounds.
Let's talk about nearly losing that tour card. We've discussed it plenty of times on BBC T Sport, but it really, really was a close shave in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very, very close, and too close, to be honest. I played in Portugal, which was my last tournament for the season, and it was all down to that last round, and I shot 67, I think, and played great, but I bogeyed the 18th, and I thought it was over. You know, I had my head in my hands, and it was just a difficult moment at that time, and you're watching all the scores coming in, and then you're getting text messages or tweets to say, oh, you're in, you're out, you're in, and it just didn't know where I was, to be honest, and it was just fortunate for me that Patrick Reed hadn't played his numbers, and the rules state that if you don't play your numbers, then you've got to be taken out of the order of merit. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very fortunate that happened.
I mean, have you ever spoken to Patrick Reed since about it or anything?
No.
No.
Do you know what you would say?
Yeah, I would have said something to him, but I think he just kind of blanked me. I don't know if he knows who I am, so I'm not going to go out my way to try and explain something that he's probably not bothered about.
Fair enough.
I suppose you don't really dwell on stuff like that. But at the same time, do you ever think if fortunes hadn't gone your way, where things might be now?
Yeah, you do look back and think about it. And obviously with the time that I've had off this season, and I'm not sure when I'm going to be coming back, you start thinking about, well, what's around the corner? When am I going to be able to get back onto the golf course and compete? So you do look back at it, and you've just got to try and stay focused and positive. And, you know, you see a guy like Tyson Fury at the weekend, what an inspiration that he is. And I look at him and think, well, where he's been and where he's come from, then, you know, there's no reason why I can't get back out on the golf course and do really, really well.
I suppose something like that is very inspirational. The exact moment you found out that you would be getting your European Tour card back, what was it like? Did you just fall to your knees, or what did you do?
Just cracked a bottle of champagne open, to be honest with you.
Fantastic.
We had a nice bottle in the fridge, and we just said, yeah, let's open that, we'll have a glass. And then I was interviewed by Sky Sports over the phone, and I think it was Dennis Pugh was on the other end of the line, and, you know, he said some nice things, and we had a quick brief chat, and he asked me what we were doing. I said, I'm just actually drinking a glass of champagne right now. So, and it went down nice.
Yeah, was there a kind of overwhelming wave of support from for yourself at that time?
Yeah, there was. There was a lot of guys that obviously I've grown up with and know out on tour to say, well, congratulations, really, really pleased for you. And when it was all happening, we weren't sure what the tour's decision was going to be, and the guys were really supportive, and that was nice to see. That I didn't think I was popular, but obviously, you know, some people did like me out there, which is nice.
I don't remember BBC T Sport, we were getting in touch as well. We were,
yeah. I bet the phone was going absolutely nuts at that given time as well.
Yeah, it must have been.
Bless you.
But I also remember speaking to you after your win in South Africa, and I think you were all over the place. Abu Dhabi was after that next, and all that kind of thing. And so, I mean, when you're traveling to these events, Take us into what it's like on a daily basis. I guess is it tiring? It must be a tiring life. While as you say, you do feel privileged to do what you do. It must be a tricky game to be in. Really,
it is. I think the guys that play in America, it's a little bit easier because you're just flying around one country. I mean, I know that there's, you know, big time differences in the sense of how far you've got to travel, and there is time difference in America, but where we go to, where we're going as far as Australia, and it is really difficult. So to go down to South Africa and then back up to the Middle East and then come home and then go back out to Malaysia, it is quite a difficult trip. But it's one that you want to keep doing. And when you're going to all these amazing places, and golf's going really, really well at that time, especially after winning in South Africa, I always said after winning in France that I wouldn't play the week after, because I didn't really get time to enjoy it. I mean, we had a great party on the Monday night.
Oh,
but it was like, I want to enjoy it for a bit longer. Yeah. But after winning in South Africa and I was going to Abu Dhabi and it's on the way home, I'm like, well, I'm going to play.
Yeah.
Keep the good form going.
Yeah.
I missed the cut, but I was just so tired. I think I was drained. And then the weeks after that, I played really well. So I did continue after that.
I guess it's a kind of like a fine balance, really, isn't it? That you have to kind of weigh up and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. You've just got to kind of make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons too.
But, I mean, you must have some fantastic stories. Can you let us into any fantastic stories from over the years?
No, what happens on tour stays on tour. That's fair the golden play. Rule.
It's like fair
a,
play.
It's like a year-long stag do by the Saturday.
I wish it was.
Fantastic.
Graham Storm with us here until 9 o'clock this evening, the European Tour golfer, and also playing DJ. It's the George Ezra fan club in here at the minute.
Sport Extra.
With the George Ezra fan club here on BBC T's Sport Extra. Cassio here on BBC T's. I always wonder whether that's on about a person or a watch.
Maybe.
Can't quite work it out. Other watch brands are available, of course.
Do you think he's just trying to flog any free things?
Well, who knows?
If you do a song about a brand of watch, we'll give you them all for free. One to consider. Graham Storm, European Tour golfer from Hartlepool, is with us in the studio here on BBC T's Sport Extra. And one thing we want to mention next... That hole in one at the 2014 European Masters, which won you a BMW i8, didn't it?
It certainly did. And if people haven't seen it, it was some celebrations set off by Shane Lowry. But yeah, it was quite an amazing thing to happen to me, and at such a good time for me as well.
I mean,
it's hard to comprehend really that is a prize on the tour, but I suppose. How does it work? Take us through it. How so is it literally you finish your tournament and it's like there's a BMW?
Well, yeah, I was in Switzerland, so I didn't fancy driving it all the way back. To be fair, but
it's been a few good Top Gear episodes. Like
that. some nice roads and routes and that to go around. But yeah, it's just you get handed the key and you do the photo and everything like that, and it's great for BMW and obviously it's great for me, but. You then get the opportunity to either you kind of take the money or you take the car, decided to take the car, build the car, and then see what was going to happen. It would have been nice to have actually driven it, but when it got delivered to BMW, the guy who brought it on the transporter wrote it off. So I never actually got to see it in the end.
No way.
Yeah, so he's backed it into a bollard or something.
Oh, no.
That's unlucky, isn't it?
The one time you win a BMW... On a BMW, on a course, golf course, and he goes and smashes it.
It took about 10 months to get it as well, but it got delivered to Park Lane in London, and I mean,
your celebrations were brilliant afterwards. But if it had been me, I'd have been climbing straight in the driver's seat and trying to
see you later,
tearing it down the fairway.
I'll finish your round later.
It was that hole itself. Describe what you were thinking straight before. It was par three, presumably.
I can tell you exactly what I was thinking at that moment in time. Probably one of the most difficult par threes in the world of golf. I mean, they've changed the green now, but that green before was just impossible to hit. So it was basically, if I hit the green here, I'm over the moon. And I pushed it a little bit, and I'm going, just get over the bunker. And it bounced quite quickly, and it hit the flag and just disappeared. I'm like, oh, has that gone over the back? And I just saw Shane Lowry just jump up in the air, turn around to me and just start celebrating. I was like, what's happened? And then I just thought, I've got to join in here. So I went mental.
He did go mental as well.
If you haven't seen that video, by the way, it is available on YouTube. Just type in Graham Storm hole in one. And the quality isn't the best on the video, no. But fantastic scenes. Measure.
I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. Is that the best shot you've ever hit, would you say?
The luckiest.
Good answer.
Fantastic.
Would you say your most memorable shot? What would you say to that? Was it? Could be. There's a host of them, really. Your South African Open win, French Open win.
You know, you do. You hit so many great golf shots, and when you strike one and it goes close to the flag, you're like, oh, that was fantastic. What a feeling. But I think the one that I always remember the most, and the one that was a bit more daring, I hit the ball from right to left, and on the 17th at the K Club, I'd pushed my tee shot into the trees right, and there's water all down the left-hand side, and the only shot I've got to get anywhere near the green, and I'm lying about fourth in the tournament at that time, so I'm trying to win the event, is to hit this banana cut with a 6-iron, only about 150 yards, so I had to take a little bit off it, and I had to go over the river Liffey to bring it back all the way onto the green. And I managed to pull it off.
Wow.
God knows how, because I have never hit the ball from left to right in my life. I hit it that way. So to pull it off was, it's the one that always sticks in my memory.
I mean, when you tee off a shot like that, sometimes do you just know when you've just caught it perfectly and you see the whip of the ball and stuff? Do you know straight away, or is it like, oh no, what have I done there?
Yeah, kind of just the feeling and the feedback you get from the strike, you know that you've hit one. The only worrying thing for me is if I've hit one and it's going towards a bunker that's 280 carry, I know I'm not getting over it. So it's like I'm disappointed because it ends up in the bunker. But when you strike one and you've flushed it down the fairway or you've hit one straight down the flag, it's a great feeling.
As daft as it sounds, right, from someone who hasn't played golf much in recent years, when I watch it on the telly, I frequently lose sight of the ball on the telly. How often do you lose sight of your ball on course?
Not very often, to be honest.
Is it just purely, do you think, your eyes in because you've played so much?
Yeah, I'm pretty fortunate with my eyes. My eyes are really good, you know, I get them checked as regular as I can. Because it's really important with the game that we're in, you know, just reading greens and seeing shots and being able to see your ball finish most of the time is great. But if you do hit it offline, there's plenty of people around, isn't there? As long as you shout that word for, which you don't hear in America very often, unfortunately.
I mean, at the moment, you, as we mentioned earlier, a bit of a frustrating time and everything, but off mic, a little conversation there. You mentioned being going into local schools. What's that been like?
It's been fantastic. You know, to be able to go into the local schools and deliver Try Golf and be an ambassador for the Golf Foundation and try and grow the game of golf, not obviously just in this area, but around the country as well, is just a great feeling. And it just seemed the right thing to do on the back of the junior stuff that I've done. And I've got an understanding wife that, you know, really helps me and pushes it as hard as she can to do that. And we've been going into schools. I think we're up to about 16 schools right now. I've got one tomorrow. And it's just great to see some of the kids' faces and be able to do something different in school. Because obviously when we were at school, it was just all about football or rugby and what have you. And you couldn't really do it indoors. And with Try Golf, you can actually do it indoors because it's all plastic and softball. And it's great fun. It's an addition and to them for PE. And hopefully the schools will buy into it. And the equipment's not that expensive. I think it's something like £225. But you've got it for life, and you know every kid's got an opportunity to try it, and I think it's a great piece of kit for the schools to take on board.
Breed in the next Grahamstorm.
That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. Life is a roller coaster. Ronan Keating on BBC T's Sport Extra, one of my karaoke specials as a young child. Mum and Dad making me stand up in front of my older brother and sing that in a car in a bar in Callanmillaw.
Fantastic. Do you know what? If they hadn't forced that, you might not be, you know, in the BBC T Sports studio.
Exactly. Ronan Keating, that was one of your song choices, Graham. Why particularly that song?
Yeah, kind of funny story. I played the Seve Trophy and actually bumped into Ronan Keating at the event. He was watching Nick Doherty play and then got drawn with him in the Dunhill Links, and my caddy texted me to say that life is a roller coaster. And I said to my wife, "What? Life is a roller coaster? What's that?" And she said to me, "You must be playing with Ronan Keating in the tournament." So anyway, and it was right, and we just struck up a friendship from then on, and we've been friends ever since. And it's, you know, we see each other once or twice a year.
Very keen on his golf, isn't he, Ronan?
Yeah, absolutely loves it. Yeah, I think he wanted to take it up quite seriously at one point, but he's definitely a better singer than he's a golfer. He won't mind me saying that. Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, I can imagine that tournament being a bit of an interesting one to play in, because it's different to the usual European Tour tournaments in that, as you mentioned, you're playing quite often with celebrities.
Yeah, it's probably my most favourite tournament of the year. You know, not only are you playing on three great links golf courses and the home of golf at St Andrews, but to get the opportunity to play with either a top businessman or lady or a top celebrity, you know, it could be a film star, or you could get Vladimir Klitschko or anybody like that, you know. And I've been lucky enough to play with Ronan for 3 years, Damon Hill a couple of times, Sir Steve Redgrave. Wow. So I've met some really famous sports people.
It's So Steve Redgrave as well. Better golfer than he is a rower? No.
No, definitely. But a really, really nice guy. One of the best.
Stick to the day jobs if you're listening. Mate. Yes. we ran over time, actually, but it's just
I'm enjoying myself.
It's been a brilliant to have you in the studio. I mean, looking forward now. I mean, you alluded to it before. It is a bit of a frustrating time for yourself, what with your wrist injury. I mean, you mentioned as well you don't really have a necessary time frame, but as a trajectory going forward, what do you want to achieve in your golf career?
I mean, the ultimate goal is to get in that winner's circle again, not wait 10 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, if the first goal is just to get back out on tour, get back playing, being amongst the guys and enjoying my golf, travelling the world, doing the job that I love, and then just see where that takes me. Eventually, I'd like to go into coaching. You know, I think that I've got a lot to give. There are a lot of great coaches out there, and we've got some really good coaches around the Northeast too. But I think that I can add something a little bit extra with my experience on the tour and maybe add different dimensions to the coaching. So that may be something that I would maybe pursue further down the line.
And I know you mentioned one possibility of coaching there. There's a lot of talented youngsters around. Is there anyone that we should kind of look out for in the years to come from this part of the world?
Well, I think the main one at the moment is obviously Callum Tarran. He's gone and played in China for a couple of years, which he has to be congratulated on. To go all the way over to China and kind of lock yourself over there is really quite difficult, and not playing for a lot of money, but there was a major carrot at the end of it to qualify for the web.com, which he's won the Order of Merit this year. So, you know, big congratulations to him, and obviously look forward to see how he gets on over in America.
Fantastic.
You mentioned there your experience. You've been right at the very top with tournament wins. You've been right on the very brink as well. You mentioned you nearly lost your European Tour card. It's like life is a roller coaster,
exactly,
isn't it, Roland Keaton? It describes
it. It's imperfect, isn't it?
I mean, looking back on your career as a whole, how would you sum it up, if you can, in a few words, or is that pretty much impossible to do?
It's a difficult one. It has been very much up and down, but it's been a major part of my life playing golf around the world. And I'm just fortunate enough now to have a great family and a loving family, and I'm just looking forward to watching my kids grow up.
To think you wanted to be a footballer as well.
And, I mean, it's not necessarily something you're thinking of at the moment. You've mentioned, you've alluded to it a few times, not us, about your age. How long do you see yourself playing professionally for then? As long as possible? Or is there a time that you might say, that's me?
Yeah, again, it's just, obviously I'm not getting any younger. I mean, the one good thing about golf is that you can play for as long as you possibly can and stretch out as much as you can. You know, like I say, I'm in the gym trying to stay as fit and as flexible. I'm probably more flexible now than I was 4 or 5 years
really?
ago, because I've worked really hard at getting myself back in a decent kind of shape. But it just all comes down to this wrist, really. If that doesn't hold up, then I can't really put a time frame on it because I don't know.
Of course.
But if I can just go back out there and get as much out of it as I possibly can, I think when I do go back out there, I will be a little bit more relaxed, because I've seen it from the other side and I just want to get back out there and compete again.
In your eyes, it's not really if you go back out there, it is when you go back out there, even though you don't have a time frame.
Yeah, I'll definitely be going back out. I mean, the European Tour have given me 15 events, and if I only play 5 or 6 this year because of my wrist, I'll get the rest of those 15 events in 2020, so there will be events to play in, do you know what I mean? But hopefully I can play a decent part of the season next year and keep my playing privileges for 2020.
And just finally, you know, you mentioned you enjoying your kids growing up as well. How important to you is that family unit in terms of your career and the support behind you?
Yeah, it's massively important. I mean, it is. It's very difficult when you go out on tour and you're missing your kids, but obviously with modern technology and FaceTime and things like that, it is. It has got a little bit easier, and to see your kids on a daily basis, even though you're thousands and thousands of miles away. But just to watch them grow up and, you know, hopefully pursue their dreams, and hopefully I can help them in some way. And, you never know. One of them might take up golf, they might not. I'm not going to push them in that direction. It's whatever they want to do and see where it takes them.
Yep. The only problem with that modern technology is you get pestered by people like us.
I don't mind. I don't mind coming in any time.
Well, we're hoping you come back in very, very soon. Graham,
thanks very much.
It's been an absolute distinct pleasure to have you in, and we wish you a speedy recovery as well as your wrist injury.
Keeps updated as well.
Yeah, keep
will
us
do.
Updated.
Thanks for having
and
me
as soon,
in, guys.
And as soon as you're back out on the fairway, we'll be the first to get in touch with you as well.
No problem.
Best of luck in your recovery. Thanks very much. There's Graham Storm with us in the studio on BBC T-Sport Extra, playing DJ as well between 8 and 7 minutes past 9, and he's going to finish things up with a Christmas song.